Support for this podcast comes from Avangrid.
This is definitely a blue-collar community, and I'm kind of a blue-collar guy.
Rick Sealscott didn't see himself as a farmer, but wasn't about to sell his grandparents' Ohio farm. An Avangrid wind farm pays millions to the community and landowners like him each year.
Farming's up and down, but the wind turbines give us steady income. We're holding on to the farm, and we're making money. And I would absolutely do it again.
Discover where energy meets humanity at avangrid.com.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, President Trump has called Nancy Pelosi incompetent and called Chuck Schumer a loser. Now, he's striking deals with the two most powerful Democrats in Washington and sending out tweets at their request. And after meeting with the president, Senator Schumer gives his version of the story. It's Friday, September 8th. Glenn, what was this phone call on Thursday morning?
Well, the president called his newfound friend, Nancy Pelosi.
When he called this morning, I said, thanks for calling.
And she said, look,
people really need a reassurance from you, Mr. President.
This policy that you've announced of a six-month review of
DACA,
the Dreamers program, is scaring the hell out of 800,000 of these young immigrants.
These people will not be vulnerable.
Could you do something to reassure them more forcefully that they are not going to get deported? And
boom, 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 the tweet appeared.
Quote, for all of those DACA that are concerned about your status during the six-month period, you have nothing to worry about. No action. Pretty stunning that a simple Nancy Pelosi interaction could get him to do what he'd refused to do for 48 hours.
So this phone call with Nancy Pelosi was kind of just the cap to an unexpected week with President Trump and Democrats. It seemed to start really badly for the Democrats because the president rescinds DACA. But then there's this meeting at the White House on Wednesday. What was that meeting supposed to be and who was there?
Yeah. So let me set the scene for you. It's Wednesday. The president has called a bipartisan meeting in the Oval Office. They start trickling in. Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell on the Republican side. The vice president comes over from the executive office into the Oval Office. Chuck Schumer is driven over from the Capitol. Nancy Pelosi enters the room. And they are there essentially to start, not conclude, negotiations on what looks like a hellish September. And the two big things that they're looking at. Raising the debt ceiling, the chronic headache that often leads to government shutdowns if deals can't be made, and creating a short-term spending bill. And on top of that, the catalyst for making something happen was this massive Hurricane Harvey relief bill. They're there sitting on these couches. They do the photo op, and they think they're just going to have a preliminary kind of a photo op of a conversation to just start things.
But that's not what happens.
The president, Michael, had other plans.
The president met with congressional leaders this morning.
So the main thing that had to be dealt with was the debt ceiling, because without that, you can't do any of the other spending bills. So here's how it lined up.
Republicans wanted a longer deal on the debt limit.
Senator McConnell and the president's own Treasury Secretary, Steven Mnuchin, advocated for an 18-month extension of the debt ceiling.
18 months through the midterm elections, but Democrats refused.
And Mnuchin really, and this is a remarkable scene, just picture this in your mind's eye, Mnuchin is kind of leaning forward in his chair. You've got the Democratic leadership and the Republican leadership on couches, the president in a wingback chair, the vice president sitting next to him. Mnuchin is passionately making a case for an 18-month extension, saying the markets needed it for stability, and boom.
In a stunning move, President Trump bucking his own party.
President Trump interrupts him.
Wow.
Points to Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, who have been pushing this three-month deal. Points to them and says, I'm going with them.
He broke with the GOP and sided with Democrats on a bill that provides hurricane relief, raises the debt limit, and funds the government for 3 months.
It was a remarkable moment. From everything that I've done in terms of reporting the room, the Republicans responded essentially by gasping.
Republican leaders left to answer questions on the president's unexpected deal making.
So let me get this straight, Glenn. We are in the White House. You have leaders from both chambers and both parties negotiating this debt ceiling. And Trump just takes the side of the Democrats.
That's right. It's like if you walked into the prom with your date and you get over to the punch bowl and then you walk over and ask somebody else to the prom.
So, Glenn, what's the significance of choosing the Democratic plan? Do we know why he went with the Democratic plan?
It actually makes an awful lot of sense politically, and it's something we've expected him to do since he was elected. Remember, Donald Trump did not run as a conventional Republican. He initially didn't want to take a loyalty pledge. So we'd expected him to cut all kinds of deals with Democrats, particularly on infrastructure, but he hasn't. And it seems to me now that he realizes in order to sort of save his presidency and get any real accomplishment, he's going to need to start working with Democrats. And Michael, the other element is it's shocking. This is a guy who likes drama, and this made a big splash.
So what's going on with the actual personalities involved that we should understand?
It's really clear that Donald Trump does not like Mitch McConnell. Same holds true for Paul Ryan. The president will never forgive Paul Ryan for basically abandoning him after the Access Hollywood tape. Chuck Schumer is an Outerborough guy, a scrambler, somebody the president dealt with on real estate stuff.
His father and my grandfather were builders together in Brooklyn.
Really?
Yeah.
In an odd way, he's got a lot more in common with these two coastal, quote-unquote, elite liberals than he does with the people in his own party.
I was very proud of Chuck Schumer. He could speak New York to the president.
And I think what Mitch McConnell and Mark Short, the president's legislative director, fully realized, you just read it on their faces in the photographs, was that the president had let Chuck Schumer into the room. And that in and of itself changes the dynamic.
Tell me what you mean. And I want to talk about that photo. When a photographer captured Chuck Schumer through the White House window during this meeting that we're talking about, Schumer looks thrilled.
It's Chuck being Chuck. I mean, yeah, this is the way the guy, you know, backslapping, making jokes, you know, reminding them of stuff that they've done together in the past. I don't know what he said to him,
right.
But anyone who's ever dealt with Chuck Schumer knows how he operates. And it's really a very tactile. You can see them physically engaging with one another. It's like two guys at a diner.
Hmm.
And that cultural dynamic for a guy like Trump, by the way, Michael, who misses New York every minute of every day, there's a certain home cooking aspect to being around Chuck. And I think, you know, that's something that all these Midwesterners and Southerners who he by political necessity has to ally himself to will never be able to deliver to the president.
I'm struck that both Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer were so eager to talk about their interactions with Trump in such a public way, to basically to boast about asking for something and getting it from this president. Isn't that potentially dangerous and counterproductive for Democrats? This is a president, as you know, who likes to seem in control and totally independent. So the suggestion that he is obeying Democrats seems like it could very easily backfire, right?
Yeah, but they're playing with house money.
What do you mean?
They weren't in the conversation before this. They, you know, they were just outside screaming, raising money, writing press releases nobody was reading. And now Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer at the center of the conversation. If he turns on them in 2 days and says, to hell with you, I don't want to do business with you anymore because you've been boasting, they'll be like, great, we had a great 2 days and now we can slam him for not doing deals to make in the benefit of the American people. This is literally a win-win situation as much as you'll ever see it in politics for these guys.
Is it possible that President Trump, despite the way he campaigned and has governed for the first 6 months, actually could be this kind of breakthrough figure for bipartisanship?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, like, look, you have to run the government. And the basic mechanism of putting your hands on and running the government changes the dynamic. The thing that was also really different, Michael, about what he did in this meeting is he took charge. Mike Pence sat there and didn't say a word. During the healthcare negotiations, Mike Pence was his lead negotiator. It helps that the issues are sufficiently broad and political in this that the president is conversant enough to know about them. But, you know, we've been talking about this question of him outsourcing leadership to the Hill. This kind of move, if it's sustained, represents actual leadership. And you can tell because the Republicans were seething in private and giving us all kinds of colorful background and off the record remarks. But when it came to being on the record and voting, Republican leadership quickly fell into line.
Good morning.
So let's come back to Thursday morning.
Cuomo, these are the five things to know for your new day on Thursday, September 7th.
The news coverage is all about the president striking this deal with congressional Democrats on the budget and getting something done.
Strange bedfellows. President Trump strikes a surprise budget deal with Democrats.
He was able to do something he hasn't been able to do for the first 7.5 months of his presidency.
President Trump campaigned on a vow to make great deals. And this morning, the White House says that agreement he struck with Democrats shows he's fulfilling that promise.
So do you think that feedback he's getting is what explains this call and conversation to Pelosi, that he's excited about getting work done with Congress, rings her up, strikes another smaller deal to send that reassuring tweet about DACA? Is that kind of how we explain it?
Look, there's this great scene in the second Lord of the Rings where there's this king who is trapped really under the thrall of this advisor for a long time. And then someone comes along and kind of throws the advisor out of the castle, and the king changes his entire perspective. I think you're seeing a little of that right now with Bannon. Bannon being out of the White House, even though Bannon lost a lot of influence internally and Steve Miller, his protege, is still there. I think there is a sense that Bannon's political theory of the case, sir, stick with the right wing. If you diverge from the core of your party, you are going to get killed. I think the fact that Bannon is not physically in the building advocating that position means that Trump is now open to explore new alternatives.
So it sounds like what you're saying is that we're seeing the real Trump, the Bannon-less Trump, which is far more open to drifting across the aisle and working with Democrats.
I think he's far more open to drifting. He's not tethered to any of the conventional motives of normal politicians, ideology, even sort of the exercise of raw power. What he is he wants to prove to people that he can do this and he wants to stay alive. So he's going to ultimately move around the political map to wherever he needs to be that keeps him going. This is a real moment in the presidency. If he decides to cling back to the base, we know he's stuck in this rut. If he's able to sort of expand outward and bring some of the base with him while bringing new people, well, that's real politics, not this other stuff that we've seen. So this is the moment, the real test of Donald Trump as a politician.
Glenn Thrush, thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael.
I think we will have a different relationship than you've been watching over the last number of years. I hope so. I think that's a great thing for our country. And I think that's what the people of the United States want to see. They want to see some dialogue. They want to see coming together to an extent, at least. And I think you see that with DACA. You see that with so many different things. I think you really saw it yesterday, loud and clear. The people of the United States want to see a coming together, at least to an extent.
We'll be right back.
This podcast is supported by ACLU. The ACLU knows exactly what threats a second Donald Trump term presents, and they are ready with a battle-tested playbook. The ACLU took legal action against the first Trump administration 434 times, and they will do it again. To protect immigrants' rights, defend reproductive freedom, safeguard free speech, and fight for all of our fundamental civil rights. Join the ACLU today to help stop the Extreme Project 2025 agenda. Learn more at ACLU.org.
Hey, it's John Chase.
And Mari Uehara.
From Wirecutter, the product recommendation service from the New York Times. Mari, it is gift-giving time. What's an easy gift for someone like under 50 bucks?
So in our Gifts Under 50 guide, we have this super cute palm-sized Bluetooth speaker. It comes in an array of cool colors. It's waterproof. You can bring it anywhere. I want one for my garden.
I love it. Check out all of Wirecutter's gift recommendations for yourself and everyone else at nytimes.com/holiday guide.
All right, we're ready to go. I'm just going to grab a chair.
How's my sound?
I'm actually moving the microphone a little bit.
I hear you have a way to take away my Brooklyn accent.
You don't want to do that.
No, I don't.
On Thursday afternoon, my colleague Carl Hulse interviewed Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer in his office on Capitol Hill.
So you have to be feeling pretty good about what's gone on the last few days. So kind of
I really
bipartisan
do.
Breakthrough.
You know, when Leader Pelosi and I walked into the President Trump's office, we didn't know what to expect. And of course, everyone's sitting there, McConnell and Ryan and the Treasury Secretary Mnuchin and Chief of Staff Kelly and Vice President Pence. We were sort of outnumbered. They said, this is how we want it. This is really Leader McConnell and Leader Ryan. And we could have said, well, we're not going to help you at all. Instead, we proposed a compromise. You know, in the past, Republicans have said, we're not going to give any help to avoid not paying our debt, and even we may try to shut down the government. We said, we're not going to do either of those, but we want to keep our leverage. And if we do 3 months for each, that will be fair to you, fair to us. And Trump, to his credit, understood that, understood that we were compromising, understood that we were sort of trying not to just be partisan, try to work for our advantage, but at the same time, we didn't want to give the store away. Who knows? We don't know if this will be a pathway to the future or not, but it would be nice if it would.
Well, what was it like in there? Would you say it was tense?
No, it's sort of friendly. I mean, the one thing, look, Trump and I have gone at each other for a long time. He's called me some names. But the one thing we've had is we're New Yorkers. We're pretty direct and we talk right at each other. And it worked.
There's a picture that someone took from outside.
Oh, yes.
What was going on at that moment?
Okay, I'll tell you what went on. This is actually what went on. Trump is saying to me, look out the window. There are all those photographers. Maybe we should go out together and announce this. And I said to him, I don't think we should go out together because honestly, Mr. President, I don't know what you'd say and I might have to contradict you. He laughed. Then Kelly was standing there and I said, I'll bet General Kelly has the same problem. And they both laughed.
So it wasn't
That's what was happening.
It was already done. It wasn't any part
it
of the deal.
It was already
making.
Done. I was being emphatic, but in my sort of usual Brooklyn way, nothing.
But you said you and Trump do have a history, but he's also been a guy who contributed to your campaigns. You had a relationship. Right?
This would sum up the history a little bit. It's the first day at the White House where they have the four leaders, the same people who are at this meeting, Leader McConnell, Speaker Ryan, Leader Pelosi, myself. All his staff is there. It's the first, you name it, Priebus, Bannon, all of them, you name it. They were all there. And he opens up talking to me. And he says, I had the first fundraiser Chuck Schumer ever had. I said, not really. And then he said, it raised $2 million. I said, $263,000, Mr. President. And the whole place broke up. That sort of sums up our relationship.
So were you surprised when he took your deal?
Yes. And you could see it evolve. He started off the meeting sort of on the other side, and we managed to persuade him. It was pretty good.
So then you got another call from Trump today?
I was there again today.
No, but also was
I got a call early this morning. He said, this was so great. And here's what he said. He said, do you watch Fox News? I said, not really. He said, they're praising you. But he said, and your stations, meaning, I guess, MSNBC, CNN, are praising me. This is great.
And you guys have had some tough times with the new president, right?
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
Is this a turning point? I'm wondering, is this a turning point?
It is too early to tell. The proof of the pudding will be in the eating. If the president abandons the hard right positions he's always had, we're not going to obstruct for its own sake. I told him that. I think it's either an aberration, maybe, but it's possible that they've learned that just riding and hugging the hard right doesn't work. And if that happens, maybe some things could get done.
Or was he just trying to punish the Republican leaders and he was mad at them over health care? What do you think about that?
People have speculated that, and obviously he doesn't get along so well with them. But being in that room, I don't think if that had happened, he would have been with us from the outset, and he wasn't. So we'll see. I don't know. It's too early to tell.
Carl's full interview with Senator Schumer is Saturday's episode of our weekend podcast, The New Washington. Here's what else you need to know today.
Look at the size of this storm. It's huge. It is wider than our entire state and could cause major and life-threatening impacts on both coasts, coast to coast. Regardless of which coast you live on, be prepared to evacuate.
The governor of Florida, Rick Scott, has issued large-scale evacuation orders as Hurricane Irma heads for the state, with winds reaching up to 175 miles per hour.
We are being very aggressive in our preparation for this storm, and every Floridian, every family should take this seriously and be aggressive. You've got to protect your family. Possessions can be replaced. Your family cannot.
The storm has already killed 7 people and devastated the Caribbean islands in its path, destroying 95% of the buildings in St. Martin, leaving half the people of Barbuda homeless, and cutting off power to 70% of Puerto Rico. And during a speech at George Mason University in Virginia on Thursday.
It's a great honor for me to be here today to address a very important topic.
Education Secretary Betsy DeVos announced that the Trump administration would begin rewriting the rules for how colleges and universities handle sexual assault cases.
The truth is that the system established by the prior administration has failed too many students.
After listening to advocates on both sides, DeVos has concluded that the guidelines put in place by the Obama administration to protect victims had repeatedly deprived the rights of the accused.
With the heavy hand of Washington tipping the balance of her scale, the sad reality is that Lady Justice is not blind on campuses today. This unraveling of justice is shameful.
The Daily is produced by Theo Balcom, Lindsay Garrison, Rachel Quester, Annie Brown, Andy Mills, and Christopher Worth. Lisa Tobin is our executive producer. Samantha Hennig is our editorial director. Our theme music is by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsverk of Wonderly. Special thanks to Brad Fisher, Peter Sale, Sam Dolnick, and Michaela Bouchard. That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you Monday.